Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Field of Vision podcast. My name is Bill Bulis, and today we have a very special guest from the Lighthouse of Central Florida, Miss Goddess Johnson, who is a vision rehabilitation instructor, and you are also a mentor for people and kids and stuff like that, which I think is awesome. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And of course, as always, our website is blindrehab.com. You can go to our website, click the podcast link, and subscribe for free on any of your favorite platforms like iTunes, Google Play, and most of your blindness-related products will carry our podcast as well. So check us out, blindrehab.com, and hit the podcast link for that. Also, we have been on Facebook Live every day for the past couple of weeks at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Hope you guys will join us and listen to the Field of Vision live and get interactive with us. You know, we've had people chiming in as I'm talking about rehabilitation stuff, and it's been going really, really well. So feel free to check us out, Facebook Live at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. For the Field of Vision. So you are a vision rehab instructor, and you had a heck of a journey getting to that job, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
So you've got a very interesting history. So you lost your vision. How old were you when you lost your vision?
Wow. I was 29.
So that was last year, right?
No, 29. Okay. I know. Yeah, last year. I knew I liked you.
No, but so 29 years old.
Yes.
So for the first 29 years of your life, no vision impairment,
nothing
like that. Did you, like when you were in school, do you ever remember interacting with anybody who had a vision impairment?
Honestly, no.
Nothing. So nobody on the street, like it wasn't some next door neighbor with diabetes.
No neighbor, like nobody on the street. Wow. Besides just watching TV and seeing people like that I knew that were, you know, visually impaired or blind. Other than that, for me on an everyday basis, no.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's interesting because I think a lot of people have that experience, you know, and then you encounter somebody who's blind or visually impaired, and it gets, you know, it can be an interesting experience when someone meets somebody like us for the first time. You know?
Yes.
All right. So your story is deep. We're gonna get into the weeds with you.
Okay.
tell me a little bit about your upbringing. Like what is it about? Because there's some special stuff about you that I think people need to know before they get into how you lost your vision and stuff like that. Tell us your history.
Absolutely. I am originally from Houston, Texas, and I am one of five children. When I was 7 years old, my mother was incarcerated for life without the possibility of parole. And my father was already serving a 44-year sentence.
Wow.
So I grew up as what people refer to as a system child. Me and my five brothers and sisters grew up in foster care. We were all split up. The only two of us that stayed together were myself and my sister. Mm-hmm. And I was from the age of 16, I had been in over 16 different foster homes, two group homes.
Good Lord, and 16?
Yes, and I was never legally adopted, myself or my sister. Mm-hmm. And when I was 17, I became emancipated, and I took custody of my sister and raised my sister.
She was with you the entire time while?
Correct.
While you were in foster care?
Yes.
Wow. Do you remember any visits and stuff like going to see your mom?
I was never able to go and visit and see my mother. Mm-hmm. It was something that In the beginning, I thought was just because of going around and bouncing around from different homes. That was something that they didn't do. When I became older, I just found out that it was by my mother's request. Mm-hmm. She just felt that she wasn't deserving of that privilege to be a mother. So.
Well, you turned out awesome. I mean, I like you. You're so even tempered and like you've just for being through as much as you've gone through. You know, you seem like you've adjusted, like not just adjusted, but
yes.
I mean, you've made an awesome life for yourself.
Thank you.
So, so tell us a little bit about. So you said there were no kids, nobody that you kind of ran into with vision impairment, or at least nothing that you noticed. I think sometimes we don't notice people.
Nothing that probably that I really noticed at the time that was out the normal, I guess you can say, that I can remember. My very first encounter, I would say, of someone that I physically knew that was blind wasn't until I was older and became a nurse. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you and you did. You went through school, again, first in your family to graduate?
I was the first in my family to graduate high school. I have four brothers who all are incarcerated, and they all are serving extensive sentences. So for me, I was the first one to graduate high school and go on to college, because for me, I was determined to be not what the stereotype was for a quote-unquote system child.
Okay.
So I have never been to jail. I never even so much as got a speeding ticket when I could drive. So I was pretty excited and happy about that.
We're in Orlando, Florida. I'm going to make sure we change that. We're going to take you to Disney World, have the Mickey Mouse Patrol take you out.
And let me roll with the golf cart.
I think they got a jail up in Disney World, like a holding area.
No, okay.
That's not very intimidating. You know, a guy has a badge with mouse ears. But anyway.
Yeah.
So you were with your sister.
Correct.
And she had a child?
My sister had a child first, yes.
Okay.
And we became our own family.
Yeah.
And shortly after, I had my son. And so we were the family that we made for ourselves. Mm-hmm. My sister followed in my footsteps. She wanted to become a nurse, and she was on her way to becoming a nurse. She was in school. Mm-hmm. But at the time being, she got a job at the same hospital that I worked at, and she worked in registration downstairs in the emergency room in the front, and I worked in the back, and we worked together, and we did everything together. My sister is my best friend.
So tell us the story.
We worked together, as I stated, and like any other day, I worked from 7 at night to 7 in the morning, and my niece was in a 24-hour daycare. So me and my sister got off of work like any other day, went to pick up my niece, got on the highway to proceed home like normal, and we were hit. I later found out that the person who hit us was a lady who had epilepsy, who shouldn't have been driving.
Oh, wow.
And she actually had a seizure on the highway and caused a 5-car pileup on the highway. My car was the second car. And I remember the hit, and that's all I remembered at the time.
So you are, I mean, everybody says this and they use it like really cliche, but you're lucky to be here. Like,
yes,
like
I am.
You're lucky to be alive.
Yes, I mean, I am.
You know, so you were in the car with
my sister and my niece.
And so tell us what you remember. Like after, you know, so there's an accident.
There's an accident. I remember waking up, and I remember that it was dark. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I remember waking up, it was dark. I couldn't really verbalize anything. I couldn't really talk. And I remember I couldn't really move. And I was kind of uncertain as to what was going on.
Do you remember do you remember what you thought about where you might be?
I didn't remember where I was, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But since it was dark, I just thought I was waking up from being asleep. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing a voice coming in, and she announced herself as a nurse. And she was, I remember her saying, she's awake. And then there was a silence, and then she introduced herself, and she told me I was in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then shortly after, I heard another voice, and it was a doctor. He introduced himself as he was my doctor. And he told me, he asked me, do I know where I am? If I know where I am, he asked me to blink my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know where I was, so I didn't. And so he told me at that time, he said, I have a few things to update you on. And so he began to tell me that I had woke up from being in a coma for 9 months.
9 months.
Nine months.
Wow. I don't even know what I was doing 9 months ago. Besides, you know, doing like this type of stuff. But I mean, wow, that is such a long time. Mm-hmm. And so, you weren't able to talk.
No.
Right. So you're taking in all this information, which we're gonna get to some more of it in just a second. Mm-hmm. But you're taking in all this information, and you can't even really respond.
No.
Right. Are you moving?
No.
You're not able to move.
No.
So you're basically, somebody is hitting you with a ton of information, like to hit you with something that you've been out for 9 months, and you can't even respond. Like that's just ridiculous. I'm just in your head. Like, what was going through your head when he's telling you that? Do you remember any of it?
I at that time, when I remember hearing it, but trying to wrap my head around what he was saying, I was kind of like in a state of shock for a moment. Mm-hmm. Because for me, I don't know if to be in a coma for 9 months and to not have any family there advocating to keep you on a machine is a miracle in itself.
So what else did he tell you?
And then he began to, and I remember him saying that the reason why it's dark to you is because I am now, he was like, your vision has been impacted. You're blind at this moment due to the impact of the crash that you were in.
Did he use the word blind?
Yes.
So hearing that word for the first time, do you remember like anything? Like, we always hear that people are just like, they don't even want to hear it. They don't want the word blind mentioned. Like, you have organizations that have blind in the name. If they even send you a letter, you don't want the word blind on mm-hmm. there because of what it brings, you know, the stigma that comes with it. So do you remember?
Remember a feeling of numbness. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that tears just started to run down my face. Mm-hmm. And I remember just wanting my sister. Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't ask for her?
No.
Obviously. So what else?
And then I was told that my sister and my niece didn't make it.
Mm-hmm. So that's, again, no way. My problem with the whole thing is just no way for you to
right.
even, I mean, process it. You know, the way we process stuff is like, you say things, you verbalize stuff, try to hold yourself up somehow. You know what I mean? I don't know. That to me is just rough stuff.
It was.
You know, it's just rough stuff.
And I can't even begin to explain how I felt, because I just felt like I just got hit with the three hardest blows that I had ever felt in my life. Mm-hmm. I'm blind. You're telling me I'm blind, and then you're telling me that I lost the only family that I've ever had. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
So speaking of which, like, your family, you had a son. We just talked about that
yes.
a little while ago. So now, tell us a little bit more about after the hospital or after the conversation with your doctor and stuff like mm-hmm. that. So how did you progress from there? Like, what?
So from there, I underwent extensive amount of therapies. Mm-hmm. Occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, over the course of almost 3 years. I went through these therapies. I had every therapy there was, but when it came to my vision, I was given a card for a support group that I couldn't read.
They handed you a card for a support
group? They handed me a card for a support group that I could not read.
And this is part of the problem. Like, I'm taking like a gerontology program right now with nurses and social workers, and one of the problems that I'm looking at is that they get no information. Mm-hmm. I'm not even talking about training. They get no information with respect to blindness and low vision. They just a quick referral, if that.
Yes.
You know, and you're basically on your way. Yeah. After they've dealt with all the other stuff.
All the other issues.
And speaking of the other issues, you had to learn how to walk again.
Yes.
Talk again.
Yes.
What else?
I had to learn how to be able to gain as far as mobility functions within mm-hmm. my hands, mm-hmm. My limbs.
So yeah, so it's not just walking.
It's really everything. Being able to, because your body is just stiff there for 9 months. Yeah. So no type of
you
movement.
Got rebooted.
Yes. But to them, to my therapist, and I commend each and every one of them. And I thank them for their determination and their motivation, because with all of that, you know, I can walk and I can talk. I don't have any memory type of issues, short term, long term, and I don't suffer from any type of seizures, which are pretty common.
Common.
Right. The only thing was my vision.
So you're at this point, you know, learning to walk, learning to talk,
mm-hmm.
learning to move,
mm-hmm.
learning mobility, probably dealing with things like fall prevention.
Yes.
You know, once you've, you know, mastered all these tasks all over again. And as we said, you are now a mom.
Correct.
You're still a mom.
Right.
From years before. And you are in a situation where you now have to take over and be a mom.
Yep.
So what was that process like?
Devastating, and one of the hardest processes I've ever had to endure. Because to go home, in the beginning, my son, when this originally happened to me, he was 5.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the course of the 3 years, my son turned 8. Mm-hmm. So for that time, my son knew mom that could do everything. So when mom comes home and mom can't even get out the car and get to the door on her own, it was pretty overwhelming. My son's father was there in the beginning. I like to say he tried to be there in the beginning, long enough for about 9 months. Within that time, I became pregnant mm-hmm. with my second child. And
that's a heck of a try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So within like 4 months into that pregnancy, it was too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so he left.
Was it just the vision, or was it other stuff too?
It was the vision.
It was the vision.
Yes.
Did they tell you that, or do you just kind of?
He told me that.
And so the conversation was pretty honest. It was too much.
Yeah.
And he, okay. Well, obviously that's common, right?
Mm-hmm.
That happens all the time. When you have people who lose their vision later in life for whatever reason, that is a really common thing where either the spouse or the significant other can't deal, and they kind of tap out, you know? I mean, they go away, and it happens.
Yes.
It happens a lot. So you're now left with this little boy.
Yes.
Who I hear is an amazing little dude.
Yes, he is.
He's an amazing big dude at this
yes,
point.
Yes, he is.
you know, but so tell us about like Going home.
Well, going home.
And here he is. You know, what's your son's name?
My son's name is Jovan.
Jovan, what's up? Big ups, Jovan. All right.
Yes. That's my hero.
Yeah. You know what? Based on what I'm hearing, he's one of my little heroes too, man. I love the stories that you've told me about him and some of the things that he's done as a kid and all that. So yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So for him, he became my soul support system, you know, and for me as a parent, my son became my guide. We started because within 5 months I was going to have another little person. And basically what the, you know, trying to maneuver, I had a determination, and we began with trying to orient myself around the house, getting through the house. I never was given a cane, so I had to solely rely on his verbal directions. And sometimes, you know, I didn't know what depth perception was. I just knew that when I get to a step and he would say step and I would step too soon, that step was a fall.
Yeah, that was problematic.
Yeah, so, you know, shorts and dresses just weren't something I wore during these occasions.
Yeah, me either. I don't think I would look good falling.
A lot of falling, but a lot of getting up. And my son began.
And that's the important part, by the way, getting up. The getting up part is, you know, you got to pick your teeth up.
Yep, and I had to get up. I would try it again. And eventually, I made it around the house, and I learned my house. And started with things, everyday tasks, from, you know, figuring out how to brush my teeth, how to get my clothes together. We coming up with creative methods to be able, so mommy can know what was what. And then the most important test of all was being able to function and keep my house, you know, up and pay my bills. I still have bills to pay. I couldn't see it. So my son began writing checks. He paid all the bills. He read all my mail. He was the parent. And the reason why I say that, because he did all the things that I should have been doing, or I should have been able to do, but I couldn't. When it came to cooking, we did it together. We learned how to cook together. I learned how to use my stove with my son. Learned how to use everything, my microwave, wash dishes, laundry. But that meant my son learned all of that stuff at a very early age. But one thing that they don't tell you is when you're pregnant, and basically I had a social worker that would come out, and because I had to need services and take classes and things like that, because now I basically had to be able to show these people that I could take care of my newborn that was on the way.
You have to prove that you are competent because you're blind.
Just because I couldn't see.
And they were pretty upfront with you about that. That wasn't like one of those, well, we just want to see. They were pretty brutally honest about why they were asking you to do these things.
I had to make sure I wasn't going to be a harm to my child.
Correct.
Or be an endangerment in her safety, and to where, you know, I could be able to take care of her on my own. And so that began a different challenge, because one thing I've always had, was my kids. And I didn't feel it was right that someone get to determine whether or not I was fit to take care of my daughter because of the fact something happened to me that I couldn't control. But I couldn't focus on that. I had to focus on being able to pass this test. Because that's how I looked at it.
And that's what it was. It was a test. It's a test that basically, if the social worker, and a lot of them do get overzealous, you know, it's a test that could potentially not have any right answers.
Correct.
You know what I mean? If they've got it in their mind that you can't do it, and that's just how the test works. It's not anything too formal, because, again, social workers don't have the training to do vision rehabilitation stuff, so they don't even know what they're looking for. You know, well, how do you prepare food? Well, there are techniques that you can learn from a rehab teacher that will help you with that, you know. Right. But these guys don't even know that. Mm-hmm. So they're asking you to pass a test without giving you any of the information or absolutely any of the ability to. So that's messed up.
So it was all on me and my son to figure it out.
So when you went home, mm-hmm, did they still? I mean, they obviously let you take your daughter home from the hospital.
Yeah, I passed the test.
You passed the test.
Yeah.
So you got home, and yes, and they still, there were still visits.
They
obviously
still, they visited. They right visited on a regular basis.
Which they wouldn't do for somebody who was sighted, by the way.
No.
Just got to throw that in there. Yes. It was blindness and only blindness that caused that site visit and the continued mm-hmm home visits. So.
Yes. And for me, it was a humiliating feeling. It was a degrading feeling.
Why?
Because I was a good mother. Mm-hmm. And why should you have to judge me because of something that was beyond my control? You know, but I couldn't focus on that. My focus was every day, every time they came, was to make sure I could show them that I could do it.
What was the appearance of your son? Like when you were was he eating?
My son was eating.
Was he clean?
My son was clean. I even was told verbally by the social worker that she would never guess that I was blind when she came to my house. And at first, I didn't know whether to take that as a compliment or an insult. So and then I was like, well, why do you feel that way? She's like, it's so clean and everything's so organized. And I go to people's house that can see, mm-hmm, and it's not even like this. And I was like,
well, you would think a person who's blind, their house is organized because it kind of needs to be, you know. You
right, so in order need to get around, you know, that's how I function.
But no, there are people that do and there are people that don't. I don't think it's necessarily specific to blindness. I think, you know, there are sighted people that cannot keep a clean house no matter how hard they try.
Right.
You know? So, and a lot of times it's because they're not trying. But so you had a clean house and you had all these compliments, yet mm-hmm they're still coming by. They're still mm-hmm furthering the testing process, trying to, you
correct
know, yeah. And again, there shouldn't have been a case open. Again, if your mm-hmm son, if your 6-year-old at this point was clean, well fed, you know, no negligence, no mm-hmm neglect,
you would think no that abuse, would be enough.
Like, you know, why would it be any different for the other child coming in? But yeah, I mean, they again, overzealous social workers are a problem. And I used to be, I went through all the training to become a social worker. I have my first degree was in social work, and I saw a lot of people just making decisions on things they didn't really know anything about. They had no training at all with respect to disability. So that's like some scary stuff.
Yes, it was.
So your son, you were saying, helped you. Like y'all kind of learned together how to modify things and yep do them differently.
My
and all
son
that
taught me how to maneuver out in the world, as I called it. Mm-hmm. Taught me how to. We rode the public bus. We maneuvered around the grocery store. We grocery shopped together. Mm-hmm. We made it work.
Okay.
During the course of this time, I passed the whole parenting test, mm-hmm, and those visits stopped when my daughter was a year.
Oh, wow. So that was a long test.
Yeah.
A year is a long, yeah, like it doesn't sound like a lot because people just go, it took a year. It took a whole year of your children not being malnourished, not being neglected, it took a whole year for them to decide that, okay, here's this blind lady who's gonna we can let her go now. We can not tie her down and make her jump through hoops and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A year is a long time to have to go through that.
Yes.
So, I mean, a couple months is way longer than you should. It shouldn't even take that long when they look at your older child.
Right.
But a year is out of control.
Yes, sir. So,
good old Houston.
Oh yeah. and then from there, from the impact I had endured, I went through about 14 different eye operations.
Okay.
Everything from, I can't even remember. I just know it was.
Oh,
well,
you
a
had
lot
cornea transplants.
I remember the important ones, the cornea transplants. I had two.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them were successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I still continued on my journey living the way I was living. Mm-hmm. And then I actually went to church with a lady who actually was someone who took a, she took an interest within my case. She knew my story, mm-hmm. and she knew about Baskin Palmer in Miami, which was the the number one eye hospital in the United States. That's mm-hmm. what she told me. Mm-hmm. So she was in the medical field as well.
I love how they give advice like that. Every time they want to refer you to somebody that mm-hmm. they know, this is the best one in the country. Right. Like, you hear that everywhere. It's better than Hopkins.
And so I was like, well, okay. You know, for me, it was like, all right. And she submitted it, and I got a call. And there's a doctor, Dr. Sarah Wellick, and she wanted to try a different type of approach. And they usually don't do more than two. And if I was willing, she wanted to try. And so I came here for the first time because of that. And this was about 3 years ago now. Mm-hmm. And I came to Miami, and I had the procedure where they used the younger tissues and a younger cornea. Mm-hmm. And it actually took.
Cool.
And 3 days later, it ruptured.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and those were painful.
Very painful.
Yeah.
And I basically was going back. They brought me back into there. They have an emergency room there. And it was basically just a repair, and they were measuring me for a prosthetic eye. Mm-hmm. The reason why they focused on my right eye is because it didn't have, they felt that it was a chance that they could do something. But my left eye, they basically told me there was nothing they could do. So my left eye would always be permanently blind.
All right, so they do this procedure.
They did the procedure.
And you are in recovery.
And I'm in recovery.
And they take off.
They take off my bandage.
Uh-huh.
And I saw color for the first time in years. And then I was afraid. I saw a glimpse of color, and I was afraid to open up my eye.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted me to read a letter.
An eye chart.
An eye chart.
They put you in an eye.
And
that's terrible.
And I said, no. I'm not. I said, I'll open my eye, but I want you to bring my kids in.
There you go.
So they brought my kids in, and I took a deep breath, and I opened up my eye. And in the center, for the first time, I was able to see my son, who was 5 when I last saw him.
Correct. And now he's
now 11.
11. Wow.
And my daughter, who I had never seen.
You had never seen your little girl?
No.
And she is now?
3.
3. And you're seeing her for the first time.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's actually cool. And people don't realize how awesome that is.
Yes.
When you get to do that.
It was the best feeling in the world. It's not like I opened up my eye and I could see 20/20. I want to make that clear.
Oh yeah.
But I see, if you take a drinking straw,
mm-hmm.
and hold it up and look through it, that's how much of a field of vision I have in my right eye.
Little sweet spot.
But it's enough.
Yeah,
because
it,
for me, it allowed me to be able to see them. And from that day, my life to me was forever changed, because I felt like, you know, I was never gonna complain, and I was just gonna be grateful and take every effort that I have to just keep on being able to do whatever I could. Mm-hmm. And because of this surgery, it caused me to have to move to Florida, because you have to be followed for a year after having a cornea transplant.
Correct. Yeah.
Something, anything can happen.
Yeah, so they don't want some doctor that didn't touch it to touch it afterwards.
Absolutely. So for me, being a single parent on disability with 2 kids, I can't just commute back and forth from Texas to Florida. So Miami was a little bit much for me. So I was told about Orlando, because they have Florida Eye Clinic out here and a specialist out here that I could go through and commute back and forth. So I took the journey to move here to Orlando, Florida,
mm-hmm.
Relocated here with my children, not knowing anyone,
mm-hmm.
just me and my kids.
There
and that's how we came here. And still was going on through life, living, you know, the way we had adapted to. And one day I noticed that in my, where I lived at, there would be this bus that came every day for this lady. And I remember, like, thinking, what is this? You know, every day. I just happened to ask her, and she began to explain to me it was a bus service, a paratransit service, mm-hmm. that comes to you. They come to your door if you have, like, different medical or disability. And she told me how to go about it. And I'm like, okay. And for me, with taking the buses and things like that, I was like, well, this is a little bit more convenient. Mm-hmm. So I traveled everywhere with my daughter at the time because, of course, my son was in school and my daughter wasn't of age to be in school yet. I got approved for the service. And the first time I was actually going to a non-related appointment to vision. And the driver picked me up and I'm getting on the bus and she's like, oh, wow, you know, you must have went to Lighthouse. And I'm like, what is that? what? You know, like, no, yeah. I'm going to the doctor, you know. And then she's like, I was like, what is that? She's like, you know, the school that teaches people, like, you know, that are blind and visually impaired on how to do things. And I remember thinking, like, there's a school that teaches you to do stuff like this, because you have to remember, I was never told about any school or nothing. I got a card. Yeah, so
you got a card that apparently
that I couldn't read. So for me, it was like, okay. So I remember going home and having my son look it up and on the internet, and lo and behold, he was reading it, and this was a school, and this is what they did. And so I remember calling the next morning, and I was told that I had to go through Division of Blind Services, which I didn't even know what that was. Mm-hmm. So that started my journey.
Division of Blind Services in Florida is the equivalent of rehab services anywhere else in the country, such as like a Commission for the Blind or something like that. So they call it in Florida, the name of it is Division of Blind Services. Mm-hmm. So I'm just putting it out there for anybody who's listening that doesn't know. Yeah. So.
And I went there and I met with a counselor, mm-hmm. and basically she asked me what were my needs. And for me, my need was I needed money. I needed more money. I needed to work. Mm-hmm. Because for me, coming from a field where I made a really good amount of money to now being on disability, it just wasn't enough.
No.
And I had tried countless times to apply for so many jobs, because I felt like there were things that I could do. And
so what'd you apply for? What kind of job?
I applied for everything from answering phones, telemarketing, to the one job that will always stick out is I applied to work at Wendy's. Mm-hmm. Now,
as a manager?
No.
No, exactly. Y'all need to hear this.
I applied to be I originally applied for a cashier, mm-hmm. and then I said, well, I can't do that because I couldn't maneuver the cash register. Like, it was something I didn't think I could do. So I applied to be a lobby attendant, which is simply wiping down the tables, mopping the floor, and cleaning the bathrooms. Mm-hmm. And I went for my interview. And in so many trying to be nice words, I was told basically that I wasn't qualified to clean tables or clean a bathroom. And I remember leaving there.
I've been to a Wendy's bathroom. They don't exactly, whoever took your job needs to be fired, okay? I'm sorry, they don't do I think you could have done just fine. But
but to leave there, I remember that was humiliating. Yeah. And it was hurtful because I done made so many accomplishments. I graduated college, for heaven's sakes. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me I can't clean a table, so I couldn't get a break. Mm-hmm. So that was my sole purpose. So they told me, okay, well, you'll become what's called a vocational rehabilitation client. Mm-hmm. And I was like, and basically that meant that I was a person who wanted to go back to work. Mm-hmm. So there was a process. So I went to Lighthouse of Central Florida because I had to go through a program. And the first time I ever went to Lighthouse, I was completely, like, I walked into a different world. Because for me, I remember sitting in the lobby and I could see this guy, and I hear this computer, and I'm like, I know I don't have the perfect vision, but that computer is not on. And it was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, sitting there, like, okay. And then I remember going back, and I'm meeting with different, you go through different assessments.
Mm-hmm.
So I met with the independent living skills instructor who did my independent living skills, and their course is 7 weeks. So I'm going through the skills, and basically I have adapted the skills to the point where she approved to fast track me. So she was like, we'll put you in. And it was like the 5th week of class, I think. And I was like, okay. I didn't feel like I needed it, but I was like, sure. I was willing to do whatever I had to do. I just wanted to work. So then I went for my computer assessment. And then I got introduced to this system called Zoom Text. And he's enlarging things. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. You know, and it's like, a whole world of opportunities to me started opening up.
Yeah.
If the computer can talk to me, I could do this. You know, I could be able to do
it
this.
Can
so
talk.
Yeah, exactly. I began to have hope for the first time in a long time.
People don't seem to understand, like people who don't have to use like assistive technology, they don't seem to understand what a real thing it is to be able to use a computer with speech or
yes.
use it with with magnification, I think they can kind of understand. But when it comes to using it with speech, there are people that just, no matter how much you explain it to them, they won't get it. And I'm just glad you had that experience.
It was definitely a life-changing experience for me. And I'm forever grateful.
So what got you to work as a vision rehabilitation instructor, which is kind of cool.
What got me to work?
There's a lot of people that are listening to this that want to get into our field and are trying to get into our field. So talk about that real quick.
What made me get into the field was actually being a part of the class.
Uh-huh.
Being in the class, and I remember thinking of all the years that I felt that I robbed my son of being able to be a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing I could go to a school and they can teach me this in a class. And I remember going through that class with other people like myself, being able to share in the journey. And going into it, I didn't think I needed it, but I did need it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it helped me learn so many other different techniques. And it helped me to learn about different aids and different equipment that have changed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling of hope and that feeling of just to be independent again is a feeling that I was forever grateful to my instructor. And it reminded me of, I became a nurse because I wanted to help people. And I finally was able to find a career that I could do now where I could get the same satisfaction. And I wouldn't have never been able to experience that if I wouldn't have went down this road.
Yeah.
So for me, that was what I wanted to do. And I remember being in the class, telling my instructor, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna be working here. And she said, okay. And I was like, I'm gonna do it. Wait, just wait and see. And the biggest thing for me that changed my life with going through this course and what my instructor helped me was, they had a lady who came in who was a low vision therapist, and she showed all these different devices, magnifiers,
mm-hmm.
and she had this everything from magnifiers to telescopes, not telescopes, what are they called? Monoculars.
Yeah, yeah, monoculars. Yeah.
Different things, but she had this one piece, because remember, all this time, we had adapted a lot of things, but there were still things I couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't read.
Mm-hmm.
My son was still paying my bills. My son was still reading my mail.
Mm-hmm.
He was still having to do things that I still couldn't do. So I remember her passing around this device. It was called a Pebble.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a portable, they told me it was a portable CCTV, which is like a portable color magnifier that enhances things. So I remember she gave me this tool and put it over this paper, and I have never been so happy to read the word "the."
The word "the." Yes. Yeah, because you could, exactly. So because finally you could see it.
I could finally see it. And yeah. I was like, oh my goodness. And then she wanted to take it from me. I'm like, no, I need this. Yeah. And then my instructor said, well, we're going to, you know, just, you could refer, go back, your counselor, you'll go for a low vision exam, which I had never been for one of those.
And you had lost your vision for how many years now?
This has been over, at this point, 8 years.
8 years.
Yes.
So 8 years you hadn't had any kind of low vision exam.
No.
This is where our system fails.
Yeah.
You know, we have to, I really believe we got to reach more social workers and nurses and stuff like that. We really do. Mm-hmm. We do such a good job preaching to the choir. You know, we're here at convention right now. And it just needs to improve. We gotta talk to these people and get them on our side more.
Because I had no idea, Bill. I didn't even know there was a difference. I've been through my regular eye doctors, but I didn't even know that this type of doctor existed. So I travel with my daughter everywhere I go. So I remember we went to my low vision exam, and we went through, and I'm sitting in the office and. Then they put me in front of this big screen, and it's huge. And I'm like, okay. And they turn on the light, and then I'm like, wait a minute, it's a big version of the little device that they gave me. So my daughter's sitting there, and the doctor brings over a book, and Dr. Saul put the book under the machine, and I began to read for the first time, and I, for a moment, forgot what I was doing, to be honest, until I heard my daughter sniffling. Mm. And I look over and I'm like, what's wrong? And she's like, Mommy, she was like, I love the magic school. So then I'm confused. I'm like, what's the magic school? And she's like, Mom, where you go? Because look, they brought you here and you're reading me the book. Mm-hmm. And I just broke down. The doctor was crying. I was crying. My daughter's crying because it clicked. And then I'm like, my whole world was just like changed that day, Bill. It really was.
It never gets old. I've been doing this for how many years now? Years and years, like, you know, decades at this point. Like, you know, and it never gets old when you see somebody learn what their options are and learn that you know, when you see them finally, when it clicks, like you said, when it clicks and they determine that there's going to be stuff that they can do and that there is a life for them, that it's not all lost, you know, and that just never gets old. Like, I hear you tell this story and I see people that go through this stuff all the time and come to terms and I've seen it click many times, and it will never get old for me. So I appreciate how hard you've worked to get this going. I mean, you're now an instructor.
Yes.
You're going back to school.
To do some
work, which is awesome. You're gonna get some good training and credentials to improve more and more on what you're doing, which I think is awesome.
Thank you.
You know, I mean, you've had a rough one. You've had a rough one, so I'm proud of you.
Yes, I have.
I'm proud of you. People, this is what this field needs. People like you that have a real story.
Right.
That have a real kind of ability, and being that you went through it, now you believe in the abilities of other people who are going through it.
And so I totally admire and have a utmost respect for people like yourself that have these websites so people can be educated. This is from my heart, honestly, because when I came to Lighthouse and I met Catherine and she introduced me to your website, it has been a tool for me that has helped me just be able to know where to go. Just being able to know that I can call and I can get real advice and I can know what to do. And that's what it's about, because I would never, ever want somebody to have to go through the journey the way I did. I would want somebody to be able to be educated and to be able to know this, because the main thing is now it's taught me that yes, I am visually impaired, but that doesn't define who I am anymore. It doesn't. Nope. I'm so much more, and I have so much still to do, you know. So I think it's very important that, and commendable for the organizations, the people like yourself that go out and get the information out there, because it can prevent somebody from having to learn it the hard way, like I did.
Well, I appreciate the credit, but you, I want you to remember that you also need to credit yourself, because you're one of the people that goes out there and does it. You do your best, and, yes. and now you're jumping in, and you're gonna do some college level training on this, yes. stuff. I mean, it's people like you too, and you can't ever forget to give yourself some of that credit. And a lot of people do. A lot of people forget to go, you know, I did that, and I'm doing good, and I'm helping people and all that stuff. So you need to remember to do that.
Yes. Right?
So that's the thing. So anyway, Goddess Johnson, Vision Rehabilitation Instructor, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I'm gonna give you a t-shirt as a thank you gift. I'm gonna tell you right now, this t-shirt says "The Bumpy Road to Success" on it, and it talks about Braille. It says Braille, the bumpy road to success, but you have been on a very different but equally bumpy road, and you're a successful lady, and I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, y'all, tune in next time when we will have another guest or other content for you here on the Field of Vision podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.